humanity to where Death Holler brought us. Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan?
Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. Are you ready to review some found footage zombie films, Urena?
Yeah, I'm saying that I am, but I don't know how well I'm going to do.
They can be a little bit tougher to deal with the horror of it than some of the regular movies mm-hmm. that we're watching.
Yeah.
A little bit more intense, I'll just put it that way. Since the Blair Witch Project, with its early but brilliant viral marketing, which took the world by storm, found footage films have been their own subgenre. While not without its own pitfalls, shaky cams, mid-to-poor acting, and shoestring budgets being the majority of those, found footage has overall been a very effective means of instilling horror in an audience that has grown numb to traditional films in the genre. This owing to the removal of the invincible cameraman slash woman and a film style that puts the viewer in the mindset of the actors that they are following. It was only natural then that zombie films, which are generally cheaper and more easily produced than other horror staples, would eventually find their way into this subgenre. Join us as we start playback on this scruffed up bloody camcorder we found and review Savage Land from 2015 and George A. Romero's Diary of the Dead from 2007. First up, though, if you're enjoying the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show.
Now, before you jump into Savage Land, I want to say that we've been growing steadily, slowly, but steadily. On YouTube is what I specifically can see. I can't see analytics for other podcast platforms, Apple and Spotify. But what I can say is that some of you are discovering that we do respond to you. So literally comment, give us your thoughts, give us your opinions. I promise you, we won't come at you crazy or anything like that. Like, we genuinely have been enjoying it. And some of you are starting to realize that we do respond. So, hey, you know, talk to us. We want to know what's up. So,
yeah, we've had some really good opinions thrown at us and some really good comments, so we appreciate all that.
Yes, definitely.
First up, Savage Land from 2015. Tagline, horror has no borders.
That is hella good.
Considering the movie and what it's about.
Yes, yes. Oh, my God. That's... I have to go back. We don't have time right now, or I don't want to even dwell on it. There was one other good one this season, and I was like, this is the best one we've had. But this one may have taken the cake.
Yeah, it's simple, but it really epitomizes what the movie's about.
Yeah.
Directed by Phil Guidry, Simon Herbert, and David Whalen. Also written by those individuals. Music by Zoviet France. Made for a budget of $100,000, and that's it.
No box office? Is this like a Shudder type of film? Or
see, I don't know because I couldn't really find a box office, so I don't know if it was like direct to streaming is what they intended with this movie, but I mean, that's what I came up with.
It's free on YouTube, so it's one of those movies. Oh, God, I hope when people search for this, they don't fucking find us and get mad because they're like, well, this is not the movie.
Principal players, we have Noah Montez, who plays Francisco Salazar, the protagonist slash day laborer murderer of the film. We'll get into that a little bit. J.C. Carlos plays Carlos Olivares, who's the Border Patrol agent, to me, one of the best parts of the movie. Lawrence Ross is played by Lawrence Ross. And I mistakenly had him in here as public defender. He's actually the author of the book that was about Salazar. We have George Lionel Savage, who is Sheriff John Pirano, the local law enforcement. Kind of has like a Boss Hog vibe for anybody who knows Dukes of Hazzard. Lynn Wine plays Lynn Matheson, a professional photographer. And he, it's really weird because he's a talking head segment in this. And but he's actually a writer for DC and Marvel animated features slash shows.
Wow.
And this isn't a trivia, but the Matheson part should ring a bell to people. He chose that name specifically for his character because he wanted to tie into Richard Matheson from I Am Legend.
Okay.
Edward L. Green plays Gus Greer, the local hunter that's in the film. Valen Rain plays great, and the final one that I'm going to list because there's a bunch of talking heads in this. Valen Rain plays Grace Putnam, who's the pastor's daughter and a friend Francisco, and plays a very pivotal part of one of the scenes of this movie. I'd say one of the biggest emotional impacts of the entire movie.
Oh, God.
Synopsis. In a small border town at the southern border of Arizona, on the Mexican border, an illegal immigrant and day laborer was charged with the grisly murders of the people of Sangre de Cristo.
A whole fucking town.
And a whole entire town. A documentary crew follows the efforts of an author as he tries to prove the innocence of the plaintiff using photographs captured the night of the murders. Will the horrific images caught on the camera be enough to exonerate Francisco? And if an innocent man is put to death, will the circumstances that led to the deaths of the entire community spread to the surrounding towns and cities? That's the other question that's posed. Quotes, and there's only one of these, from Lynn Matheson. And suddenly he stops being a historian, stops being an observer, and becomes an active participant. The moment he stopped being a photographer and decided to do a single human action to save somebody else is the moment that changed everything for him. You give up being a photographer and you become a human being, and you lose what has kept you alive and safe through the rest of the process. And I think that's a pretty good quote for this movie because this one and then the other movie we're covering, Diary of the Dead, posits that the person behind the camera, and they even say it in this, Lynn Matheson says it, when you're the cameraman, you're able to distance yourself from what you're seeing, so it takes some of the fear away. It allows you to be basically an observer, and you're not part of it. But he's saying that in this one pivotal scene in the movie, whenever Francisco engaged with one of the people he was photographing or taking a picture of, then that made him that broke that wall. And so that, you know, that basically made him vulnerable, as yes. it were, at least mentally, to what was going on.
Tell me if I'm wrong, and we'll be reviewing it next, but like in Diary of the Dead, right at the beginning, I feel like one of the videographers gets fucking taken down. One of the news people, like immediately.
The media did, not the camera person, okay. but the media, the talking head, as it were, was taken down. I
thought I saw a camera person get taken down because I thought I saw the camera go down too.
He drops it and then he goes over and he's holding the woman as okay. she's like bleeding.
Oh,
and,
that
like,
makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So getting into this movie, visuals. This movie is made to look like one of those like true crime specials yes. that you would see.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed like that. You have different, and I like how they did this. You have different, even different camera styles. Mm-hmm. Like you have like the high def camera for like the talking head segments. You have, you know, some like the, when they use footage from like some public access channels, like on I can't remember the name of it, but it's like on Heinzman or whatever, which that's another reference to Romero, because first zombie in Night of the Living Dead was Bill Heinzman. But whenever there's segments where they're showing like the sheriff or whatever, like whenever he was just doing his like little public access shows to yeah. trump up his popularity, they're like a different grain, like different film, mm-hmm. like quality, which matches what those type of shows would be like, you know, because they're patching a bunch of stuff together.
I feel like the best visuals were the worst visuals, though, which were the video footage of him being interviewed and yes. the footage of what he documented.
The photographs that he documented, which is the best part of this. And the I even like the scenes where they go, like they show like a 3D, you know, like graph or like depiction of like the town and where the murders were taking place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was kind of cool. Because I was like, we're going to go into it. They're like, and then they take you down. And I was like, oh, no, they're going to show something. And they don't, because it's a documentary.
Yes. But the way that they do it, it gives you a framework for where it's happening and what's happening, so that you're, and this is the best part of this entire movie, your brain fills in the gaps.
Oh my God. Like
your brain is filling in the story, and most people realize this. You can get, your brain knows what scares you, so it can make the scene way worse than what they could ever show you. And speaking of that, they do show like some photographs of like what the, you know, like the crime scenes after the bodies were removed,
mm-hmm.
like the blood and stuff. And that helps fill in. Tell me if I'm wrong on this, because this plays into the visuals. Those photographs, when I first started watching, I'm like, these things are blurry as shit. They don't show anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when they zoom in and you do see some clarity in them, your brain's like, I don't want to see any more clarity on mm-hmm. this, because this shit is like, there's scenes in this where they zoom in on some of the faces of the creatures, essentially demonic, like zombie, like creatures.
Yes.
And they're horrific. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, whenever you see like the glimpse of what they are and your brain fills in like the, it's almost like a camera negative is what you're seeing. And then your brain fills in what it actually looked like if it was up and running after you.
Yeah. Okay. So what I was getting from some of the still images, and I'm actually going to send you one right now, but what I was getting from them is, almost like, scary stories to tell you and to tell in the dark.
I'm so glad you said it, because that's when I was telling Cody to watch this movie, I told him exactly that line. I was okay. like, these photographs are like a photograph depiction of what Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark artwork was like. That's exactly yes. what I was getting off of it.
And very effective is how I will describe it. Because I'm going to be honest with you. At first, I was like, well, where's the movie? No, this is the movie. The mockumentary is the movie. You're not going to get zombies chasing somebody or anything like that. You are going to, but it's going to be in stills. It's not going to be actual movement.
you get it in one scene at the very end of the movie, whenever they and you only see it for a split second. And I'll get into that with the story, because I didn't pick this up to the second viewing, but that last scene, the very last scene that they show in this, says so much about what happened, like, after the fact.
Yes,
like, it's a big thing. So.
Yeah. So, so I was kind of disappointed, and I was like, "Well, what's up with the pictures?" But then there's a lot of pictures, or it feels like there's a lot of pictures, and it's
yeah,
they're scary as fuck. Because, like you said, I don't know what your brain was doing, but my mind went to, this is fucking real. This film makes it feel like it's real. Because this is how it actually would go. I don't know that these movies, if the zombie apocalypse was ever a thing, I don't know that it would happen as fast as they make it depict in movies. Because it's always to enhance the fear, the horror, and make it way more dramatic. I feel like it would kind of be like this film perceived it. Yes, it was kind of a one day, one night kind of situation, but it was only kept to kept to one town. It was just, it did, and the way that
and then the survivor. That's mm-hmm. the other thing. The survivor of it wouldn't get the hero's welcome for doing what mm-mm. everybody would assume that they did the killing, because
exactly
to assume anything else means you have to accept.
You have stuff to accept that it's not, real.
That it's real. That it's stuff that shouldn't exist is real, and the brain won't allow you to do that.
You have to say the Z word.
Exactly.
I wouldn't want to admit that, and I was not ready to admit that with this film either. Watching this and feeling the way that I felt, which is the highest intensity of fear, because I kept mistaking this movie for a real thing. That's how good it was.
Yeah, it's and the other part is too, is that it's way more personal, because you're not seeing the action. You're not seeing Francisco live through this. You're living through this because you're living through his photographs and what he saw that night.
Yes.
And the only thing you have to go by is what the talking heads are saying was found, and what little he's willing to say about it. And because he's got such massive post-traumatic stress disorder, he's not saying shit about most of this.
Oh, God, no. No. And, like, are they going to believe him?
And that's the other part about it that gets into the story part of it. They're not going to believe him, because this movie does have a political bent. And if it was done... if it was done just a little bit differently, I'd be rolling my eyes, but it's just believable enough and just well done enough that them setting up the antagonistic relationship between, like, the American citizens and the town over and the day laborers that are here, that they acknowledge illegally shouldn't be here, crossed over the southern, or, you know, got through the fence somehow, and at the southern border, and, like, their relationship and how they automatically assume he's one of the cartel. He's one of the, mm-hmm. you know, the fuckers that came over to kill, rape, plunder. And so lock him up, fry him, or, you know, well, in this case, shoot him up with the, you know, lethal injection and be done with him. And don't bury him over here, because he don't deserve a burial in the U.S., you know.
Do you think they actually... at this point, do you think he wants to live after what he lived through?
No, and we'll get into it when we talk, elaborate on the story. Them killing him wasn't the end.
Mm-mm. No.
And not, I'm not talking about of the other things, of Francisco.
I'm aware.
Because they do such a good job in one scene. But before I get to that scene, I want to talk about this. Just the beginning of the photographs, when they show the southern hills behind Francisco's house and the silhouettes that you can barely mm-hmm. see of the creatures all lined up in the hills.
Oh, no.
That's enough to start your brain to what it needs to do.
This movie's a mind fuck is what it is, when those fucking photos... is what it is. I am going to have trouble sleeping tonight again.
Well, there's one scene, I was like, there's nothing in this fucking scene until they zoom in and there's two faces in like a bush or whatever. Yeah. And they're demonic. I mean, demonic in the sense of like zombie faces.
Yes.
But like clearly they you can see the hunger in their, mm-hmm. in their face.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then they pop up out of nowhere. It's like, I don't see anything. And then when they zoom in, then they appear and you're like, oh my fucking God. And that's the way the rest of the movie is, you know?
The pictures remind me of, and I know we've already discussed Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, but like my wedding photographer did this really cool thing where I was dancing and he swirled my camera. Or not my camera, his camera around, and the shot of me was clear, but everyone around me was kind of like blurred, and I had these cool mm-hmm. lights going on and everything, and that's what these pictures look like. It looks like, oh, he was running, so there's that, you know, he's trying to preserve himself, but the shots he was getting, that makes the faces look even more demonic. It looks like souls are leaving their body, but really what it is an extension of their face because he's moving while he's taking the photo. So technically these are normal zombie faces, meaning in terms of it would just be me or you with zombie makeup on, whatever. However, because of the movement of the camera, the way it came out, they look not just the hunger that's in them that makes them look scary. The elongated faces or the movement is terrifying.
And it's brilliant for a movie with this low of a budget they barely put the makeup on the people uh-huh. and move the camera like you said to where, and then like, and then they basically sift through what they've got and they can have much more effective zombies than what they would have had on that budget if they just filmed a bunch of people and had mm-hmm. them run against the camera.
Absolutely.
And there's only one time that he breaks any of that when he's filming, and he uses the flash to get more definition.
Oh God.
And it's for the little girl. And when you see the things behind, you do see them better in that scene. Like it's the, like one of the last few pictures he takes, there's like one of them's eyes like ripped out and like there's blood like oozing down, and then that poor little girl, she's like screaming or whatever. And then like, you know, he's holding her hand. But what I was going to say about the story, getting back into it, about Francisco, is that there's one scene in particular right before, or maybe it's right after, they decide to euthanize him because his appeal, you know, they couldn't admit the photographs in there and they wouldn't accept them. They zoom in on his bites, his hands,
mm-hmm.
and they make a point of showing that he was bit. And then they have a comment later on, the guy from the radio station that keeps like, you know, talking bad about Francisco, says that it's, you know, some patriots dug up his grave and made sure that he didn't get a U.S. burial. But there's no proof that anybody dug up his grave because his body's missing and they never find it. But did you notice what the last scene was?
The video,
did you notice what was attacking the person who was holding the camera?
No.
It's a prison jumpsuit.
Oh, no, it was him.
It was Francisco that was attacking.
No. Yep.
I only noticed it today on the rewatch. It was an orange prison jumpsuit, was on the creature that attacked the camera person at the very end of the movie, and that lets you know that Francisco's body got up and walked off.
Oh my God. Hold on. I'm not even joking, because like I said, this movie, for me to advertise it is available for free on YouTube.
And Tubi. That's where I watched Tubi, it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no commercial. Well, oh, wait, I got YouTube Premium. Sorry, guys.
Well, I should have watched it then on that, because let me tell you, this movie starts getting some really... Like, it starts really rolling with some of the stuff, and that's, we'll cover it more in the story. It starts really, like, ramping up, like, the stuff that happened in that town, and then it would cut to commercials on Tubi, and I'm like, you sons of bitches, like, you just broke the moment for me, you know?
Yeah, there is a channel called V-Horror that they posted it for free, and that's how I watched it. So, hold on, I zoomed all the way towards the end. And I did see the scene again. Hold on.
It's blinking, you'll miss it.
It really is. Yeah, it's like maybe 30 seconds tops for this last scene. but I did not catch the freaking is that Selena Quintanilla? I'm just kidding. Anything for Selena's. Oh, there it is. Oh, it is the orange jumpsuit. Oh my, and his face.
Yep, it's him.
Oh my God. Holy shit. I'm watching this in real time, y'all. Yeah, they show multiple. Yep, there's his face. Son of a bitch. Spoiler alert.
It just makes the movie so much better when you realize that that's, you know, the final bit of evidence you got before the zombie outbreak really, you know, starts moving all over.
Yeah.
And it helps, too, that Carlos Olivares or whatever, the Border Patrol agent, is talking. He's walking you through it, and he's like, if you follow where this started at, it's a map of where they were going. He said they were going north. And then he's the one that lays out all the towns that they that have experienced similar acts of aggression that are unexplained or whatever in different areas. He's the one laying all that stuff out.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Holy crap, dude.
What do you think, story-wise, what do you think about the story of the family that crawled up the water tower and, like, jumped off to keep from getting, like, eaten to death? Do you remember that?
This movie, yes. And this movie was so fucking emotional. Because this movie, and like I said, I don't know how it got you, how it triggered your thoughts, but it did get me thinking, would I do that? Could I do that with my children to save our souls, per se? Yeah, would it save our souls? Because you can't kill yourself, according to the religion that I grew up in.
Or be like the preacher or the pastor that ended up killing his child and his wife or whatever and was going to try to kill himself whenever he was attacked by the creatures.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's the thing, is like, could I have my kids look at the flowers, you know?
And I don't know if they meant it this way, but because they have the recording of the pastor and he's confessing basically to the guy that was, you know, the head of the church about what he did.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, it's like his voice changes. And I know it sounds like the tape also wears out, so that it makes it, you know, even more so. Mm-hmm. But you get like a demonic drop in his voice.
Yes.
Like he's losing his humanity at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is he turning so slow?
We don't know how long it took these things to turn.
That's,
I mean,
true.
You know,
it just seemed like there's a whole town of them. And yes, it's spreading. We're aware of that, or it has spread. But, like, yeah, okay, I guess it doesn't specify. So did they all get bit at the same time, though?
Well, the people that came up or from the south were not part of the town.
Yes.
They tore apart the migrant workers in the field because there was 8 people dead in the field. It lays that out.
Okay.
But they do say later on that that a lot of the bodies were never recovered, meaning that whenever they were killed by the creatures and the creatures moved on, the bodies laid there for a little bit,
yeah,
reanimated, and then got up and left too. So it's kind of, that's how it's kind of progressing. It's like they have to die first. The bite doesn't automatically do it, and that proves it with Francisco.
Yeah.
But once they have been bit and they die, then they'll be reanimated.
So my next question is, how long after the events is this mockumentary happening?
I think if you follow the end of it with Carlos, it's been several months at least, you know.
Huh. It just seems like a long time.
It's a slower rollout to the, but I mean, it's okay, to me, it makes more sense because, like, if you knew that there was a threat...
Wait a second. Maybe you don't die from the bite.
That's you don't.
Yeah.
Francisco didn't die from the bite. That's
what
I'm saying.
It's when you die, you've been bit, you're infected.
But when you die after you've been bitten, you're guaranteed to reanimate.
Okay, and then, of course, it could be airborne to a sense, or maybe you're close contact with somebody. Maybe you kiss somebody. And, okay... Because I'm like, well, how does it spread so easily if they're not actual zombies? you know.
And it doesn't say how you can actually kill him either, because Francisco, the only one that was put down, was that Montoyez or whatever his name, Montez, who it was the first one that came up to him while he was loading his camera up, and he had to chop him into bitty pieces to keep him from like attacking him. The hunter shot them several times. Yes. And the woman goes out of her way to say that he was a crack
exactly.
shot.
Exactly. Yeah. There's like, there's no way.
And they took him out. So like we also don't have any hint that like headshots take these zombies out.
Yeah. Huh. I don't like this movie.
The other one that's really hard to deal with is the school, because they talk about how the kids were found behind the curtain, like they tried to hide.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they were still eating.
Ugh. Well, I mean, yeah, they can smell you.
But I'm telling you, the way that they chose to tell this story, mm-hmm. like you're sitting there and you think, okay, well, I'm not going to be scared of this whatsoever. It's not going to affect me because I'm seeing these talking heads. Clearly everything's mm-mm. safe. The movie lets you know throughout it at the end of it that you're not safe, because that was just the start. And then during the middle of it, your mind's running wild with what they're showing you and you're filling in the gaps. So if you're actively engaged in this movie, which you should be,
yes,
you go from being the passive observer, just like, you know, Francisco, to actually being actively engaged in the story. And then that's whenever all the shit starts hitting you. It's like, oh, this is fucking nuts, you know.
I think for this movie, there is one movie that comes to mind. It was on the other day. Actually, Noah was watching it at Joe Bob's Diner, if you will, or Joe Bob's Drive-In, excuse me. And Joe Bob was, it seemed like he was thoroughly impressed with When Evil Lurks. He had some, it's funny, I like how he asks the girl questions. I forget what her name is.
I need to watch that because I've not watched his version, like what his take was on it. Are you talking about Darcy, the male girl? He was talking to her about it? Or
Yes. Yeah. I'm not near as visually appealing as this woman is, but it just reminded me of me and you, because you have like the in-depth questions and I'm like, I don't know. I thought it was pretty. I'm like, I thought she had a little bit more. Sometimes she has a little bit more in-depth answers, but mostly she's the looks.
Yeah. She's there for the TNA and all that. But yeah, there's some movies though that she's hyper like fixated on that. Yes. Like she's the expert on.
Yes. I did notice that. My husband's been watching it a little bit more, but I was dying. He had some really in-depth questions about When Evil Lurks. I think the only reason I could handle it being on TV was, one, I was reading my book, so I wasn't watching it. But two, I think the breaks with Joe Bob coming in and kind of giving his input kind of helped me, because that is one of those movies I don't ever want to watch it again. And Savage Land would be one of those movies. I know I'm spoiling a review a little bit, kind of, but I want to say that the reason why I would watch this movie again, because it's so fucking good, so put together. But I think the emotion of this film breaks away from the fear.
The funniest thing about that is that the guy, I feel like that there's a lot of emotion that's brought to the movie from mm-hmm. the actor who plays Francisco. Like he's acting his ass off. Mm-hmm. Even when he's not doing anything, he's acting because he's showing like this, how distraught this person is. Did you know that guy's not an actor? He's a photographer in real life. Like he's not an actor by trade.
Wow.
The fact that he did such a good job in this movie just impresses the hell out of me.
That's fucking insane. That is, I would not have believed you. I like that he's a photographer, because I think that kind of works, and I bet you he actually took these photos and was able was able to make it work the way that it worked. Like he understands, like I said, like my wedding photographer knew, I'm gonna get this picture and swirl my camera around to distort everything but the bride. That I would have never, like, I'm like, that was genius. It's one of my favorite photos at my wedding. But, like, this, the way he did, I don't know. It has to be, is all I'm saying. Now, I'm sure they maybe probably enhanced him a little bit. Like, it probably wasn't 100% him, but it could have been.
Yeah, I'm sure that he was the one. And I mean, I know it's Talking Head and, like, you know, there's varying degrees of that, but I thought everybody did their job well. Like, yes. I mean, as far as, like, the sheriff, he's smug and, like, cocky enough mm-hmm. that you get the point across that he thought that he was doing what he was supposed to for his people, but he also has that politician, like, you want to hate him. Because they even, several times in the movie, it's like they talk about how he just got reelected by a landslide, and he's all, like, with his little toothpick. And
yeah.
He's like, I knew we'd get rid of him, you know. It's like, he does his part well. The Border Patrol agent's my favorite, though, because, like, he's sitting there. He's the one, like, walking them through the different parts of the town.
Yeah.
He, you know, and even though he's Hispanic descent, he, you know, he that's the thing that helps me on this, because this could be a very one-sided political argument, especially given what we have going on right now in our country and yes. the debates for the president and all that. I mean, it's not left since 2015. If anything, it's more so now.
Yeah.
But, like he helps, you know, that, you know, it's where it's not so one-sided, because even though he's of Hispanic descent, he is a Border Patrol agent, and he's doing his job to protect the people. He, you know, he admits it's bad when he's like, some of those are good people, like Francisco, who are trying, just want to come over here. And, but he admits that there are dangerous people and dangerous things crossing over the border, and they do need to be vigilant. So
yeah.
it's not playing it one sided, you know, like we should let, you know, everybody over. He's saying that, you know, there are good people, but, like, we do need to watch that because there is a threat, you
yes,
know,
and there's a vetting process that needs to be had.
Yes. And that to me helps, you know, you can't argue that it's one-sided politically, because yes, they do go pretty hardcore at sometimes of showing the white good old boys, and they're like, hell yeah, what's the bet? You know, what do you get when you cross an illegal with an octopus, you know, expert lettuce picker or whatever they say in that. But, like, you know, they show that, but then they balance it with that Border Patrol agent. Like, he really does a good job of balancing the movie out. Like, and to me, he's very charismatic whenever he's, like, in the scenes. Like, you want to hear his expertise,
yeah.
which you should in the movie.
No, I think the only issue I had, and it's not a real issue, like, it's not crazy noticeable, but I feel like the woman, when she was talking about the hunter, I felt like she was a little too professional for just a random interview, because usually you have a lot more dumbasses, if you know what I mean, when you're doing, like, documentaries, or even when it's news.
I agree with that, but I'll say this. There's actually a couple times where the talking heads start to say something, but then they change what they're saying, and it mid-sentence,
yes.
and it's not like, you know, and for instance, the public defender who was, you know, supposed to be assigned to Francisco and did a terrible job, he goes to call him an illegal alien, but he stops when he starts to say alien, and he changes. He goes immigrant or whatever, yes. he says mid word, and I'm like, that adds an authenticity that you normally don't get in movies, because people
true.
Don't talk perfectly, you know, like they don't have those.
Yeah. Oh, that just goes to show you, I'd be on there fucking cussing up a storm. Yeah, these motherfuckers over here were just going around eating people. They're zombies. I'm telling you,
You'd sound like that one lady. There's one woman who lost her little sister
yeah.
in the school, and she says, we need to burn the fuckers or whatever.
Exactly,
she says,
that'd be
know.
Me. I'm telling you right now, the motherfuckers is eating people. Hide your kids, hide your wives.
And the music is effective in this movie.
Yes.
It's barely there, but
it's barely there.
But you don't want it to be there, because I mean, it's just enough to build the tension,
mm-hmm.
but you don't want it to be overpowering, because this is a talking head movie, and
yes.
it wouldn't sound right if it was like, just, you know, like there was, you know, like, you know, the kind of music we always argue for in a scary movie, where it's like the harpsichord, like the last set. You don't want that.
Exactly.
You just want something that would be building up, you know, in certain scenes.
I'm going to be real honest with you. This movie was so good, I did not notice the music. I was so intent on listening to what was happening, listening to the story, feeling the emotions of poor fucking Francisco, who's really fucking going through it, which is funny, because now he not only is he going through it, but he's sick too, if you think about it now.
He is, but not like, and I think that's part of, like, whenever you're watching it, especially on a rewatch, it's almost like he knows that, like, that he's that, and they put a whole thing in there about how he's a Catholic and how he's a true believer, and there's a part of him that's almost like sad because he mm-hmm. it's almost like he's acknowledging, I'm not going to have the afterlife, or he thinks he's not going to have the afterlife that, you know, a good Catholic should have, because he's going to be one of those fucking things. Yeah, you know?
I don't think it affects your soul, honestly. It's your body.
But if you're like somebody like that, yeah, you might be afraid of that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I don't want to fucking be a zombie, which comes back to the tower thing, because, like, it didn't specify whether or not they were bitten, or, you know, they just know they don't want to become one of them. But what, you don't know, we don't have the full story. So what if you do become one of them? Maybe they were protecting themselves from being eaten more than anything.
They did specify that the people who threw themselves off of the water, the only reason that they knew about the water tower is because those bodies stayed. They were eaten,
yes,
but they were still there. They didn't get up and walk off.
Yeah, okay. So they didn't have the, okay, never mind. But yeah, but I'm just saying, though, as like, if, like I said, if it's a me, I'm like, okay, how is everybody getting it? Obviously, in The Walking Dead, we don't hear it, but we know that they say that it's airborne.
Yeah, everybody has it. Confirm that on the CDC episode. Yes. It's like, everybody's got this. When you die, you become one of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, ultimately.
It's 100%.
So I would think that if you're jumping off the tower, it's just to prevent you and your family from actually getting eaten, going through that torture.
Yes, that's their primary concern.
Oh, my God. The decisions that have to be made.
I'm telling you, though, this was such a surprise to me because I've never heard of this movie. And, like, I was just literally looked it up because we needed something else to help fill out the, you know, the found footage, and I was like, okay, we need to watch this
fucking
and,
killer start to found footage section, because holy really fuck, there's not going to be any other found footage like this. Everything's going to be too highly produced.
It is, and it's going to be the thing with found footage. Otherwise, too, is like you start to get, and that this gets to avoid, is that you get a little too incredulous. It's like, how did the zombies not go away? Like, I mean, I'm going to spoil this, but there's one scene in Diary of the Dead where one of the zombies walks right in front of the camera, and instead of attacking the cameraman, who it's been behind for like a minute or two, it attacks the guy in front of him. And you're like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, because he was so caught up in the fucking film that he was shooting, it should have been biting at him. Like, that's, it was true, right behind him.
The cameraman has immunity.
But they give a good explanation in this. Not only are you past the events, so you don't have to worry about that with Francisco, they make several points or several times in the movie, they point out why he was protected. It wasn't just because he had the camera. He was using a lens that he could be away from the action and
that
still get
true.
Close-up shots.
That is true.
And he was hiding in buildings because he was the handyman for the area, so he had keys to all these abandoned buildings that he was hiding in.
Oh, my God. See, I'm forgetting about these details because I was more worried about everything that they were capturing and everything people were saying. I wasn't thinking about how Francisco was staying alive the entire time, which is weird that I wouldn't think about that, because that's the whole, honestly, premise of the film. How did this guy survive? He's clearly the killer.
Yeah, that was the reason. That was their explanation, because he killed everybody. And they even make a point of, like, the people in the tower. It's like, why would people in a water tower be so afraid of one fucking man mm-hmm. that they would leap to their deaths? I mean, you know, there's several holes in it, but they also have the political angle of, like, well, they just needed somebody to be the scapegoat, and he's an illegal, you know, yes, immigrant. So easy fix, wipe your hands, move on, you know.
Do you think that... I feel like in America now, we're like, okay, aliens exist. They fucking brought that out in the fucking thing, you know? Do you think that they should hide the fact, like, if something like this actually happened, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, some one guy killed an entire town. It's going to be the whole Francisco thing. But I feel like, as strapped as Americans are, especially in fucking, well, this isn't Texas, this was Arizona, but I would feel like a majority of people in border towns are strapped. we're better off to prepare ourselves that this is a possibility and what to look out for and, you know, just stay safer.
Yeah, but it's not really mentioned in this, but there's an underlying thing in most fiction, and this has it too, fictional zombie stuff. The government, in order to protect or keep people from like going into a panic, they lie and they cover stuff up and go for the easiest sources, which actually does more damage in the long run because people would protect themselves if they knew that some
that's
shit
what
was
I'm
going
thinking.
On.
People would protect themselves, or people are going to jump to the conclusions anyways, faster than the fucking family jumped off the fucking water tower.
Well, I mean, not to get like, you know, conspiratorial, but there was something weird that happened in like Florida, you know, a few months back where an entire mall had like every police force that Miami had to throw at it, and nothing has ever came out, even on video. And with the amount of people that have smartphones, something got covered up there. Something major happened.
That fucking was wild. They're like, no big deal. It's just somebody, some loud noises.
They said there was a bunch of kids causing trouble. There would have been video evidence of that 100%. If that's what the situation was.
Shit, there was a fucking violent riot at the mall that I was at for Black Friday, and even I got video footage of that from up top. I wasn't going near that. No, I was just trying to get my fucking sale on Victoria's Secret bras, y'all.
But that's the kind of shit that would happen, and that's why this feels so realistic. Like, everything about this feels real, just the way that they went about it.
Yeah. It's very dreadful. I just have the feeling of dread. Like, that's what this movie gave me.
I was so impressed by like how they just kept building the story up and like like we were just talking about the little minor details about how Francisco got through there. They thought that through so well. Like, I mean, they didn't have to throw that in there.
Perfectly pieced together. Every bit of this film just fit like a puzzle piece.
Yeah. And which is the appeal of those true crime, like talking head segments anyways, whenever they do their job right, you do get like the pieces delivered that way.
Yeah.
But they nailed that format, if nothing else. I mean,
hey.
I just got a little bit of trivia and then we'll cover our thoughts on the movie. The mural that's shown at the end is still on the side of a building in Los Angeles. As of the 2017, at least, it hadn't been defaced with graffiti.
That's
so
impressive.
Especially considering where it's at. I've already said, but Francisco was not a professional actor. He was a professional photographer.
Yeah.
Which is insane because that man, there are certain scenes in this where he is acting his ass off. Yeah. Like, better than professional actors that we covered in movies this season. So,
you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of the kid going back to When Evil Lurks, the kid that played the autistic kid.
Yes.
That guy is a normal guy. Give that kid a fucking award. I thought he was autistic. He plays an autistic kid better than my autistic kid.
That's the sign of a good actor. Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, it amazes me because, like, I mean, you see movies all the time where the actors or actresses are just hamming it up and it's just like, you know, but then like whenever somebody like really plays a part like this and it's like, why is this guy not acting in more stuff? Like, I mean,
scene where that kid went past his grandma when he's normal and he's like, yeah, I don't want to get cold. Make me some tea and make me some food. And I'm like, this motherfucker played me. I thought you were fucking autistic. I thought they hired an autistic kid to be in a... You're taking jobs from people with disabilities.
Lin Wein, the creator of Marvel's Wolverine, plays the Vietnam photographer Lynn Matheson, which, like I said, his last name is from Richard Matheson. And the photos were first shot on film that they used in this, and then they were then had to be reshot digitally for easier editing.
And so that makes sense. So I believe that the actor shot them and that they were edited, you know, digitally probably afterwards. But holy fuck, man. Those are some good-ass fucking pictures.
Closing thoughts on this. I'm not quite at a 4.5 yet on this movie, but I'm at least at a 4.2, 4.3. It It was a four the very first time I watched it, and on recap, especially when I noticed that they even added in that it just like chills up my spine. They've zoomed in on his fingers being bandaged.
Yes.
Then they mentioned that his body disappeared and they never recovered it. And then whenever I saw the prison jumpsuit suit, I was like, they followed this through to the very fucking end. Like, they built this perfectly.
I can't believe I didn't catch that. Obviously, I know now and I've seen it, but oh boy. And there was more bodies. It wasn't just him.
No, there was other creatures in that attacked that camp, but he was the one that got the cameraman on that one.
Which, how inappropriate, sir. You went after your own kind in more ways than one.
He proved that the cameraman's not invulnerable.
Well, cameraman was just too close. Should have got a better lens. He has some things to tell you about it, but it's too late for you.
But, I mean, it shot up to at least a 4.3 in that range for me. I want to say 4.5, but I'm not – but this is definitely a movie that I would rewatch. I mean, this is really well done.
I can't believe that you're – to me, that's low. I can't believe you're not even at a 4.5 because this is a 5 for me. This is another fiver, and I'm giving it a 5 because this movie filled me with dread. This is the zombie movies I'm talking about that make me feel like shit can be real.
And you're 100% on that. I mean, and that's why I really debated. I mean, 4.5 seems reasonable for this movie for me. I should probably just say that and be done with it.
I think you should, honestly, because like, you don't have to give it a 5 like me. You probably didn't have the amount of dread that I had watching this film and the nail biting. There's no scene that makes me scream or jump or panic like Raccoon City did, you know?
It's one of those things where I don't want to give it a 5 just because, like, I want more rewatches. But the fact that I think it could go to a 5 means that it probably will be there eventually.
Okay, and that's totally acceptable. I just this was so unexpected. This is such an unexpected hit. Like I said, I feel bad for the next few found footages that we watch because I don't think anything's going to compare to how raw and real this one felt.
On that part of it, I would agree. I do think that Wreck and, you know, to a certain extent, it's American version Quarantine, have the jump scares for days. Yes,
Quarantine for real has the jump scares because it's a lot of dark corners and shit.
Yeah, but as far as, like, the believability and the realness of it, I don't think any of them can match this. On the budget they made this on, too, like, they knew exactly how to get the most out of what they had.
Oh, my God. I have the most randomest shit. This is going to – I hope not to wreck your brain. I might have to get Noah involved. But there was a film that – I really hate that I'm bringing this up right now, but I'm going to because it's in my head. I want to say it's not Quarantine, but it's similar to Quarantine where there was a zombie outbreak in a building and people were trying to escape. And this person, I don't know if it was a girl that thought she was escaping with a guy, like she was living in one of the apartment buildings with a guy, or if it was a guy that was living with a girl and it ends up that she's actually dead and he's having conversations with somebody that – he, in his mind, they're alive because he's trying to keep his brain. He's trying to stay mentally, you know, there because he's trying to escape these zombies. But at the end of the movie, which is a total spoiler, the person that is in his bed is actually dead. Like, not even zombie dead. They're dead. Oh, my God. I probably got to get Noah involved with it. But I don't know.
I'll have to Google it off air because it's not ringing a bell immediately for me. But
it would be a movie that you would have watched for sure because I don't think it's a big movie. I think it's just like I almost want to say it could be a foreign film, too. I'll get Noah to give me the information if I'm even explaining it right. But I remember watching that film and that film fucked me up. And it's
I was just going to say, did he watch this? I mean, I
oh, no, he didn't watch this one with me.
Okay.
I need to have him watch this.
Yeah, he would go nuts over this.
And he probably has watched it, to be honest with you. I just, I didn't even bring it up to him. I told him we were watching, or we were going to review, obviously, Life Force.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's watched that. I was just like, oh, it's an alien film, zombie, fucking sucking shit out of life. I don't know. So, you know, I'm great at describing films. I totally belong on this podcast. Probably should be on a professional one, honestly.
But anyways, what was your main point with that other film that just kind of gave you the vibe of quarantine? Is that kind of,
it gives me the quarantine vibe, but also there's a lot of psychological shit going on with it. So it's a really good movie though, but I think we should, I don't think it's found footage though. It's not really found footage. It's like not filmed in that aspect, but yeah, it's a good zombie film. It's one of those films that gives me dread, unlike some of the stuff we've been watching as of recent.
Yeah, I can't. There's a lot of stuff that we watched recently. It doesn't give me that feeling or whatever. But like, they're not really we've not covered traditional zombie movies in, you know, for a bit now. Yes. So I mean, this is like the first one that
we're getting back into it.
Skews back in there.
Yeah. And I have to tell people, watch this film. You probably won't get the amount of dread that I get. I'm terrified of zombies, but like, this is a good movie.
It's entertaining all the way through. Like it captures as soon as you get into it and you get what they're going for. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's kind of sad. I mean, in a way I kind of wished I didn't know that it was a zombie movie, because I would imagine that the surprise.
Oh,
of
God.
What it kind of spoils it a little bit early though, because they talk about how the bodies were eaten a little bit. And then,
yeah, but so that could have been cannibals. Lens,
that could be. And it kind of, but like once you realize that makes it even more so, it's like, oh shit, you know, like you really get into it more, because you start out and you think, oh, this is one of those true crime things, whatever. And then however you feel about them. And then whenever you get the supernatural element, you know, it's just like it just a light goes off.
Could you imagine like, this movie having the budget to advertise like the Blair Witch did? I would have died. I would have jumped off a water tower.
If they would have like put it online and like had like little clips of different towns, like they're doing with Smile, where they have like that viral marketing or whatever.
Yeah.
They just have little towns or whatever. It's like, if you've seen Little Felicia or whatever, like little missing poster, you know, missing person posters or whatever. And it's like all around this one area.
Which is kind of messed up, insane. Because I feel like there's actually kids that are missing. So you probably shouldn't be doing that.
I'm just saying, they do shit like that to promote movies.
Exactly.
It's, you know.
Exactly. If this movie had been promoted like that, I guess I'm kind of glad it isn't. It is kind of cool. Like, I hope we get the movie out, at least to our listeners. We don't have a broad, you know, audience quite yet, but our audience can get it out to people. That's how word gets spread.
Yeah, I've been recommending it to everybody who asked me. It's like, you got a good scary movie for me. I'm like, yep, go watch Savage Land. Yeah. Free. Go watch it now.
Oh, free. I am going to link the YouTube channel that I watched it from. I feel like there's a few channels that might have it. I'm going to link the one that I found. I hope it's related to the production company. I'll try to do a little research before I jump that gun, because I want you guys to be able to watch it. And I want the people that are going to be fucking listening to this episode, or the ones who accidentally listened to this episode thinking they're going to get the film, a chance to actually see it and not get mad at me that I didn't post the whole movie. We will not do that on that channel, on this channel ever. I'm sorry. Unless Shudder or Joe Bob Briggs comes to us and is like, hey, can you fucking put this on your channel? Yes, absolutely. We will do
or
that.
Or an independent film person.
That's
like,
true.
Hey, do you care to share this on your site? Be like, yeah, hell yeah,
that's
right, here it is.
Different though, because we could share it through links. I don't know if they want me to share the whole thing as an actual video. I mean, I'll do it if they ask, I guess. So I don't know. We just won't do it for any like main prime movie shit, and especially if it's available elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a good way to get copyright struck.
And yeah, exactly.
Not that we're monetized anyways, but I mean, in perpetuity, it's like, we're going to claim this money, whatever you get off of it.
Remember, guys, we do this shit for fun, so that's where we're at with this.
But yeah, I think after talking about it, I got to give it a 4.5 with the ability to go up to a 5 pretty easily.
Yeah, it's already there for me. Like I said, I think the amount of emotion, just raw emotion, raw footage, in general, and multiple emotions. It was sadness. I don't really feel like there was happiness. There was a lot of fucking dread, though. The pictures just, my brain just did too much with this film. And this film was one of those popcorn films. It's like, sit down, get your popcorn, get your water, and you're not getting up to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's like whenever I told Cody to watch it, he was going to. He said he was going to like put it on the background and like paint some miniatures.
No,
I was like, dude,
no, Cody,
you can't watch this movie that way. I was like, there's little details that are on screen that you have to read. I was like, you need to be focused on it.
Cody, you absolutely cannot do that, sir. Like, you have to give this movie. It's not a very long movie. Give it your attention. I guarantee once you start watching it, it's going to capture your attention. Maybe it's just me. But, and I also don't know what his fear is, because my fear is zombies, so.
I think it can work on anybody's, because like I said, the brain, is, as long as you're not, as you're giving it just enough to operate off of, it will fill in the gaps to whatever you're afraid of the most.
Yes.
You know?
I cannot imagine thinking that this was real and not knowing that this was a zombie, like, a mockumentary.
Yeah.
If you had told me, you need to watch this this documentary and form your own opinion, I would be shitting myself right now.
If I hadn't said, oh, we didn't watch it for this specific episode of the zombie podcast.
Well, I mean, no, because we still would have reviewed it. Like, if this were like a real, if there was a real documentary out there, like, I'm sure there are for like the African zombies, like, that's something we could technically review. I don't know, I'd be so scared, because voodoo zombies don't scare me like zombies do. So
yeah, the cannibal zombies, as they like to call them.
So if you were like, okay, you know, here, like, look at this, I think this is a real thing, you know, what do you think? And I just watched it, and you know me, I'm dumb as fuck sometimes. I'll just fucking be like, oh, he told me to watch it. I wouldn't pay attention to all the details, you know, like what was the budget or who were the actors or anything. I would just search the film and watch it. My dumb ass would have been fucked.
and to your point, it's only like an hour and 30 minutes, which I love it when a movie is only that length, because we get so many bloated movies in theaters anymore. And even Beetlejuice was a crisp hour and like half. Beetlejuice actually held to that. It's nice not to have to be at the theater and wonder, when can I take a piss, because this movie is too damn long.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So anyways, I enjoyed this film thoroughly. I think that I know that people aren't afraid of zombies as I am, and some people are. And I think wherever you are on the spectrum of zombie fear, I think this is a really good film that you'll enjoy, that you'll be surprised by, because more than anything, this film fucking surprised me.
It's an affecting movie, if that's the best term, because I mean, even if you're not feeling, I felt dread at moments in this movie, but like, even if you're not feeling the dread, if you give it your attention and you put the effort in, it will pay off. It's one of those movies.
Yes.
Just don't be sitting there trying to watch your phone or watch TikTok while the movie's playing. It's not one of those. Doesn't give you anything if you do that.
That's a good thing to point out. There was no point of this film that I felt like pulling out my phone.
I had my phone out during the first Talking Heads. I was like, I don't know what this movie is. And then as soon as it got into it, I was like, I got to rewatch this, because this movie needs attention.
Yes. Don't. I'm telling you, it's not that long of a movie. Just put your phone down, set it to set, or pause the movie to do whatever you think you have to do, to go to the bathroom or whatever, and then get back to the film, because.
Or watch it on Tubi, where they had the commercial breaks, and then you can look at your phone during the commercial breaks.
Yes, that there you go. I didn't have commercial breaks, so I just rolled right through this film.
Believe me, it would be a lot better without them, and I'm hoping to God that they put this on physical media and give it like a wide release, because it deserves it.
It's from 2015, but man, it's just, God dang, I don't know. I am so pleasantly surprised with this film. I thought I was going to fucking, for reference, I thought I was going to fucking hate this movie.
I didn't know how you were going to respond to it. I was like, it's photographs. They're just showing pictures. There's people talking over it. And I was like, this is fucking good shit. Like, I'm liking it. So,
you know, the strangest dreams I've had in my life. So, you know, my brain came up with some shit when I was watching this. I can only imagine what my dreams are going to be like tonight, because the first time I watched this, I mean, I've only watched it once, and then I've kind of done clip reviews and things like that. But like, the first time I watched it, basically my dream was the movie. So that sucked. But it wasn't the movie in pictures. It was the movie in actual visual movement. which sucks. Oh,
yeah, yeah. You were seeing the creatures and you were fighting them off.
No, I didn't see them in my dream. I was just running from them. So with my kids, it's always with my kids. That's like a parent's biggest fear is protecting their kids in their dreams. So, you know, zombie dreams are bad enough not to have to worry about two other humans you have to protect or animals. Sometimes I'm protecting my animals too, which is, in my opinion, I'm going to say it as a mom, just as scary. My dogs fucking are stupid. They'll be barking. We'll be dead.
Yeah, I don't have that problem. When I have zombie dreams, it's usually me solo running away from them. Or if I do have a group, the group gets separated to the point that I could never save them anyway.
Yeah, so, you're like, left for dead. Hate that game. I hate it so much.
All right. I don't know that we're going to have quite this response on the next one because Diary of the Dead is very divided in the horror community, even amongst Romero fans.
Yeah. But,
we'll see what we think about that one. But with this episode, everyone, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.